Hello. This is the podcast for our class on September 22nd, and it is that was class number 10, if you're keeping count, or class number 9. I'm sorry. And we are talking about duty, continuing to talk about duty. And our question is always: is there a duty of care? We have now situations where a third party is injured, and someone who's never even met them, someone who didn't do the direct injuring, is now the question is whether they're going to be responsible, whether there's a duty to the third party for something you did or didn't do. Remember, act or omission. So we're in an area that I called enabling torts. It's not an official name. It's just a name that I think may be helpful to understand why there would even be a duty involved at all. Because you should always be asking yourself, why is there a responsibility? If it's something that you didn't actually do yourself, then why is there a responsibility to a third party? First, there has to be a duty, then a duty of care, and then we talk about whether it was breached. But if the question is something that is remote, again, we ask ourselves whether there's a duty of care. Now, a lot of times, it's important here to get it established initially that the question between duty, the distinction between duty and ultimately our proximate cause. Because a lot of the language we use for both establishing a duty and discussing proximate cause, way down the line, and we haven't talked about it at all, and I don't want you to think that this is a proximate cause discussion, but make sure that you just are aware that we're going to talk about some of this language again. Duty isn't our last chance to limit liability. So some of the language that we use here, particularly in this these enabling torts, such as foreseeability, is also going to work down the line when we talk about proximate cause. That word is going to come up again. But here our inquiry now is into duty, and duty breach equals negligence. We don't even get down the road if we decide no duty. But there are occasions where the duty can be based on the foreseeability of harm. Not only foreseeability, but that can be one of the criteria that we look to see whether a duty was established. So in these enabling torts, again, very much of a policy question involved. And with all last class, when we talked about social host liability, we saw the distinction between social host liability and commercial enterprise. Court says we're not going to oppose duty on social host liability to third parties who were injured by guests who became drunk at your party, your house, because, why? It's too hard for social hosts aren't equipped to monitor their guests' intake. It's too difficult. Commercial establishments are equipped to do that. So social hosts, as a policy matter, even though they have enabled the tort to be committed by serving alcohol at their parties and not providing oversight, social hosts, unless there's a statute, the courts aren't imposing a duty to the third parties who were injured. Move on now to our Vince V. Wilson case, where we have the great aunt who had given her bad apple of a nephew money to buy a car, even though she knew that the nephew didn't have a driver's license. She knew that the nephew was an alcohol and drug abuser. She still provided money for him to buy a car. How do we know that she knew that? Because she warned the sellers that he was a bad apple. So there's no question of, you know, that we need more facts here, the court says. Because if Vermont had a negligent entrustment law that only had dealt with lending the means of the injury, the court was willing to extend this their current negligent entrustment law to people who give money, you know, give it, not just lend, but give money, and to people who sell the dangerous instrumentality. Here, the dangerous instrumentality really was the nephew, but you can say it's the car. They've enabled both the aunt and the sellers, because the sellers, there was no conflicting testimony that they that the aunt hadn't told them that they were, that the nephew was a bad apple. The sellers couldn't get away from Vermont's negligent entrustment law by saying, no, we didn't lend it, we sold it, so why should we be held liable? They knew he was bad. They knew that there was danger. So the question, where does the duty come from? Here, the foreseeability becomes important. It was not just foreseeable, it was probably a done deal that there was going to be injury. The foreseeability becomes very important, and it's directly linked to the ultimate injury. We talked about why in this case and not in other cases, say the cosigner of a loan, the daughter had some alcoholic problems, they knew that, but she didn't get an injury for another 3 years. So again, where to draw the line? This is how we do it. We see in Vince C. Wilson, direct link in the cosigner, not such a direct link. Maybe we're going to draw the line on duty when it's not such, you know, the link is very tenuous indeed. So, matter of law, whether there's a duty of but question, it's always going to be a question of fact where we're going to draw the line. Again, why a duty here in this Negligent Entrustment Act when there wasn't a duty in our Reynolds v. Hicks? Well, Reynolds v. Hicks, one reason is Reynolds v. Hicks would have established a new law, social host liability, when one didn't exist before. Here, the only thing we're doing is extending the Negligent Entrustment Act. And it's a minor thing. This is a small thing. You know, it's not rocking the legal world to extend this act here, whereas Reynolds v. Hicks, Reynolds v. Hicks, social host liability, that was going to be a huge thing, and it was going to establish a new duty in a wide-ranging number of cases, whereas not so much here. So different reasons. Policy, duty is, you know, I can't say it enough that duty is very much of a policy question. The court, expanding liability in this narrow range of cases wasn't going to be such a major thing as expanding liability in a social host liability case. And what we're protecting a wider range of citizens here. It's the fact that courts do not recognize social host liability outside of a statute. Is that promoting safety? Absolutely not. But there's the competing interests of your home is your castle versus policy against drunk driving. Home is the castle wins out. All of the reasons given, commercial establishments in the Dram Shop Act are more they're more equipped to have ways to deal with it. Their insurance will cover it. All of these things point towards liability under Dram Shop Acts, whereas no common law liability under social host acts and policy against imposing that kind of a duty on social hosts whenever courts have tried to impose a duty for social hosts, the legislatures very, very quickly come along and negate that by legislation. So again, just talking about these enabling acts, providing the idea or putting the dangerous instrumentality into the hands of the dangerous individuals, still courts will not look to extend, unless in as they did in Vince, it was only a tiny little extension, but will not look to expand responsibility where one didn't exist before. So look on page 94, talking about encouraging dangerous conduct. Courts will find ways around that. Either using the First Amendment or using a foreseeability rationale will not look to expand the duty to third parties. Then we moved on and talked about liability of property possessors. And these are special duty rules. Just think about these as rules, very, very specialized rules for owners and possessors of land. And we talked about the common law, the early common law rules, differentiating between different kinds of duties depending on the status of the individual who was injured. I want to go back. I feel we rushed this a little bit. We did rush it, and I want to go back and discuss the Hines case beginning at next class. I said, probably overemphasizing it, that I didn't want you to get all involved in differentiating between these different categories, these classifications, licensee, EMT, and trespasser. I probably overstated that too much. You should be aware of this, and we're going to go back and talk about this again in class. But I don't want you to get all twisted around with all of the different exceptions and what ifs, because even the jurisdictions that have retained these different classifications and categories, they look at them in a very straightforward kind of way. So we're going to pick that up again in class next time. So I'm not going to go back through that again. We're going to talk about the different classifications categories, why the courts have gotten away from them in many jurisdictions, about half the jurisdictions, but they still retain some relevance. So we're going to pick that up again in class. I know we said we talked about these cases and we're going to move on, but I really want to review that again in the first part of class next time.